1846, they called it the fog that stole souls. Stage one, the eyes turn white. Stage two, loss of the five senses and delirium. Stage three, loss of erection. Stage four.
Who the hell is trying after stage two?
This is the Extra Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 407 for the week of May 2nd, 2026. I am Haunted in Honor Bar, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Woman Found Dead by Horse, Sarah D. Bunting.
Must be Tuesday.
And Old Salt, Tara Ariano.
I'm 37.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra, Extra Hot Grape. Before we get into our discussion of Widow's Bay, quick pod business. In case you miss it on EHG Prime, we now have some new functionality on the website, extrahotgrape.com. If you're not on the Discord, but you want to answer our Ask EHG questions or ask your Ask EHG questions, you can now do it on the site. Just go to any episode page where we have those features, and there will be a little link that you can click on and just link your Patreon to our website, and then you'll get the form and you can fill that out, and then your answers or questions will make its way to me, Discord free.
Hooray. Let's get into it. Welcome, listeners. We're thrilled you're here. Welcome, new listeners. We know a few of you joined, a few of you upgraded. We're happy to have you here for our discussion about Widow's Bay. Tom Loftus, Matthew Rhys, is the mayor of Widow's Bay on an island off the coast of Massachusetts. When we meet him, he's keyed up about a visit from a New York Times travel writer because a good write-up could turn Widow's Bay into the next Bar Harbor. By getting tourists' dollars flowing in, Tom could save the town from its slow death. The problem is that unsettling and unexplained phenomena are happening on the island all the time. A dangerous fog, a zombie-like illness, a suite at the local inn that not even the owner feels comfortable setting foot in. Then there's the belief that anyone who was born on Widow's Bay can never leave. But these are all just crazy old superstitions and everything will probably be fine, or not. The show was created by Katie Dippold, who previously brought us 31 episodes of Parks and Recreation and the screenplay for The Heat. The first two episodes dropped on Apple TV April 29th. We got access to the whole season, but we'll be careful about spoilers for episodes that haven't aired yet. Let's do the Chen check-in. Sarah, should our listeners watch Widow's Bay?
I was a little surprised, but yes.
Dave.
Yeah, it's really good.
I agree. It continues to get better. It's not like a perfect first season, but it's fun. It's worth watching. And let's start with coastal Massachusetts cop, aka Sarah D. Bunting. This show actually did shoot in Devens, Massachusetts. Did it feel like Massachusetts to you? What did you think it got right and wrong?
I think what won me over very quickly, in addition to that Matthew Rhys of it all, I did look up the shooting locations. It filmed also in Rockport, Massachusetts, home of Cape Side show theme singer Paula Cole.
Did
not know that. Yeah, I really thought it got at certain aspects of small town, like vacation town desperation, the way that the local historical society will seize on like kind of anything noteworthy, but that in this case it really was like, why don't you just make this like a true crime tour stop? But also the way that people who have always lived there versus summer people, and that a summer person or a guy who's a summer person as a kid is now the mayor of the town. That is a really interesting tension to play off of. It's not condescending to the town or to this type of town, but it is sort of like fondly eye-rolly about it. And that all felt very, very familiar and was well acted, I thought, as well.
Yeah. Later in the season, we see that a convenience store sells hot dogs with top slit buns like you get for lobster rolls. And I was like, oh, no, that's right. Dave, after The Burbs, this is the second show we have watched this spring about a seemingly idyllic yet not so secretly cursed town. What about this show made it more appealing for you than The Burbs was?
The show seems like it had a show bible from concept day one and sort of built around it, whereas The Burbs seem kind of scattershot. This one is combining horror and comedy in a much better way than The Burbs did. This is the closest I can get to an actual horror film and still enjoy it. It has to be leavened with comedy and doesn't have to be slapstick or crazy. Like, all the scenes where it is something from a horror film is happening is also quite funny. Scary clowns, sea hags. Like, there's something in all of those scenes where people are scared shitless, where also funny shit is happening, or the scenario is just kind of funny. So I think that is the big difference between those two. I mean, The Burbs was just sloppy in general. So, you know, this one compares well to it. But this one also feels like it was born from the 70s and 80s Stephen King mind. And then they sort of took it and said, well, this is going to be our twist on it. And, you know, they add the, you know, it's a trope that, you know, here is the city official that wants to turn this place into a tourism success story. So all that mixed up, cooked up really nice, I thought. And bravo to them for making me want to watch a horror-tinged show.
Everyone who has seen The Americans has seen Matthew Rhys playing very sad. How do we like what he's bringing to being very scared?
I first learned of him on Brothers and Sisters, which was a much more sort of, not leavened, but like it let his range show a little more. And Perry Mason also, RIP, still mad. I think one of my favorite parts of the premiere was a moment that he looked the most horrified is when his spot is getting blown up about having taken credit for tweenage ding dong ditching that he didn't actually do. And that he just, you could see his gorge rising. This is what blanching looks like. And this amount of subtlety is devoted to this moment is like, that's what makes him great. He's not afraid to just be the sort of the straight man, but also knowing that it's very funny. So I think that people who only know him from The Americans are actually in for a treat, because he never cheats anything that he's in. And something like this is really like the zest with which he's, when questioned about a bold claim about a local restaurant, he's like, fuck Cape Cod. I was like, oh, that came from somewhere very real. I'm not sure where. I'm not sure what the Welsh equivalent is, but I love it. Some actors, when they do more comedic stuff, it can be a little whiplashy for viewers who are used to something else, but you don't get that with him, I don't feel.
The thing I liked about his character as written is that he doesn't spend half the series being the skeptic when he is in the face of, you know, legend coming true. Like, he's not like Scully, where an alien has, like, you know, Mulder's like, an alien just put his tongue in your nostril. And she's like, well, I don't know. Could have been an anteater. Like, there's none of that. It's just like it. There's one and he's not sure. And then the second thing happened. He's like, oh, fuck, what's going on? And then he starts gelling more with the Stephen Root conspiracy character. So I thought that was smart. Like, I really hate it when they draw that kind of stuff out, because you know why you're here. You know, if you're media literate, you know the path this show is going to go on. So please get there by episode two. And they do.
Yeah. You mentioned Stephen Root. He plays Wick, who's a local fisherman who also knows all of the lore, all the supernatural tales that have been passed down. And so he's sort of trying to get Tom to understand the gravity of what's happening. He is joined in this show by Toby Huss, who plays the local minister. And I sort of feel like you can't have both those guys on the same production. Like, if a meteor hits it and we lose them both, like, we will be bereft as a culture. But
and also, why wasn't Stephen Root on Dickinson? Doesn't it seem like he should be playing kind of a character, a Chester A. Arthur sort of pugilist in my college days?
What did you think about two of your faves?
I got to be honest, Toby Huss, as far as I'd been able to watch, because we're under time crunch, I've only seen the first few, not the whole deal. He's doing a lot of things solo so far. So he doesn't have a lot of interaction with the rest of the cast. So when that starts happening, I assume then we'll get more sparks and more enjoyment out of that. But yeah, they're two, like, hey, it's that guy powerhouses. They're both exceptional character actors, and I hope they have scenes together, because that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. They are joined by Dale Dickey, another absolute all-star. Sarah comments on her.
Oh my God, how perfect. And Jeff Hiller and like Christian Clemenson shows up. That like she and Christian Clemenson are the ones who still smoke inside on this on this island. I mean, I was really impressed also that a lot of people who are sort of Southern coded or Midwest twang coded are doing this, and that like one of the first notes I took was like, how smart to put this on the Massachusetts equivalent of like the Acadian coast so that when Reese's accent slips, it sounds like it just sounds like Northern Massachusetts. Right. So, but yeah, I mean, there are certain, hey, it's that guys that you're like, oh, sign of quality. Like I was kind of waiting for Richard Jenkins to show up. He should have graduated from Hey, It's That Guy, but he hasn't quite. So
The key to Dale Dickey's character here is she bulldozes her dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever the situation is and whatever people don't want her to say, that's exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so she's a good foil.
Yeah, she's very put upon. There's a lot of like, she'll say something and then get ignored and be like, well, I guess I'll just go fuck myself. Like that's sort of her function. Reese's character, Tom, is also father to a teenage son, Evan, who's played by Kingston Roomie Southwick. Quite a handle.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. I enjoyed that he was believably shitty in a teen way while also getting funny things to do and not being too unpleasant to watch, and also not too much of the show resting on him. What did you think of their dynamic?
Yeah, I think if there's one thing I would not bother with on this show, it probably is that. Again, haven't watched the whole thing, don't know exactly how that's all going to play out, but if there's one thing I would take it away, it would probably be that, because I never care for that kind of thing. So but he was a believable teen. And especially, like, what a shitty way to be a teenager, just trapped on an island with one thing to do, one store, you know, like it's just a prison, the wanderlust you must have. It was fine, but that could have been the one thing to take off for me.
Sarah.
Yeah, but I also appreciated that his like teen shittiness was not his whole character. Like it was smart to play it that their first interaction is him holding up this joint and being like, do you know what this is? I just found it. And I was like, that reads more like how our generation and their teen kids interact with each other, at least in my non-child having limited dealings with my brother and my niblings. It's like, it doesn't have to be quite so 80s sitcom-y where everyone's an idiot.
Yeah.
And this isn't, which I appreciated.
I think his friend group serves a purpose, which is they are the closest thing we have to a mainlander point of view in the early episodes. Like there is a scene where they are just at some junkyard somewhere throwing firecrackers and burnt out cars. And then Toby Huss's minister character comes stumbling in from the woods where he saw something. And they had just thrown a giant firecracker into a car, and he just like stumbles in. It's just, there's evil here, and just like stumbles away. And they're all like looking at each other like, what is this place?
Yeah.
What is going on? So that I feel is a good use of that.
Yeah. I can tell you, having watched the whole season, that it takes place on a pretty short timeline. So there are a couple of tourist teen girls that show up. They're around for the whole time. Okay. So they give a little perspective too. It is also bold to sell a show to Apple TV and be like, oh yeah, and we're going to say in the first episode, there's no cell reception on the island. Like you will not see one single
What about Apple TV's satellite SOS system?
Exactly.
Everyone's eating pears. It's weird.
So yeah, the teen girls, like at one point, use their phone flashlights, and those are kind of the only time, because the kids on the island, they don't have phones. Why would they?
This could have just been set in the 80s or 90s or whatever, and it would have been almost the same show.
Which it may have been, and then they were like, this is too close to Stranger Things. Find some other way to not technologize it. I was enjoying all the old school landline handsets, though. Like, he has a princess phone in the mayor's office. Yeah. Like, okay.
I'll be writing something for the Daily Beast in a couple of weeks about Patricia, who is a town hall staffer, and how the actress Kate O'Flynn, who plays her, makes her one of the show's breakout stars. When I told this to Dave, he was like, oh yeah, her. So Dave, talk about Patricia.
She has, if you don't know what she looks like, she's sort of like a more Irish looking, what was the meme? Like super intense girlfriend. Do you know what that means?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's an actual name for it, but everybody knows who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is great. And I was trying to figure out where I knew her from forever. And I looked at her IMDb. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I just like whisked her into existence for this show. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she is fantastic. Bringing that comedy energy that I'm talking about that I enjoy. Just incredulous, but sort of naive about everything. There's just like a mix here that makes her a very compelling, likable character. Mm-hmm. And her portrayal of that is really good. Yeah, she is definitely the breakout star for me.
She gave me Betty Gilpin vibes, yeah. Not really looking like her necessarily, although she does a little if Betty Gilpin were a brunette,
yeah,
more mm-hmm. regularly in her acting life. It's a consistent dynamic between her and Tom, but it would be really easy to overplay it given how it's written mm-hmm. and how she's styled with just like she's wearing a pinafore.
Yeah.
Is she the one who's like, did you tell him about my paintings? And he's like, no.
Yes.
Is that her?
I think so.
Of course.
Yes.
It would be easy to go way too broad with that sort of like Eeyore lane. And mm-hmm. she doesn't. She has just the right touch for it.
Yeah. We find out in a later episode that she runs the town's bookmobile, which is called the Patty Wagon, made out of like an old, you know, delivery truck, but which made sure. me just love her weird ass more. But episode 4, again, this is not a huge spoiler. Patricia throws a party, and that's all I'll say. It's pretty great.
Okay. No, I'm definitely going to finish it this weekend. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's fun. Having seen the whole season, like I said, it does keep getting better as it goes. I especially thought they should have dropped the first 3 for the premiere instead mm-hmm. of the first 2, because the third episode mm-hmm. is very strong. I made Dave watch it last night.
Yeah.
But just to make sure everyone stays on board, episode 6 is a flashback to Richard Warren, the founder of the colony, meeting his second wife, Sarah. And speaking of Betty Gilpin, she plays her, so she's coming up. And Richard's played by Hamish Linklater, another one of my absolute faves, so...
Love that guy.
Something to look forward to.
Speaking of things that happened in the past, one of the things I enjoyed about the first couple episodes is the weird Welcome to Widow's Bay hotel video that appears on the TV when the mayor checks in as a dare.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to connect with the people and they're like, you're just a city boy. And he's like, oh, I'll spend a night in the haunted inn. They're like, yeah, have at it. Here's a camera. Make sure to record yourself. Mm-hmm. And he turns on the TV in his room and there's like some guy, looks like it was filmed in like 1987 or 1991 or something like that. And he is on shore and he talks a little bit. This guy in a trench coat, old man. He says like, won't you come with me? And then it's like a 45 second scene of him in this video just walking along the shore until yep. he disappears into the trees. And you see the whole thing. It's mm-hmm. very Twin Peakian.
Yes, yes.
And I really love those little touches where it's just like, you know, like not to borrow from Lost, but like this feels like it might be purgatory. Yeah. Like it has that sort of vibe to it. Like I'm trapped. I'm definitely trapped here. I cannot escape. And everything is a little off kilter.
Yeah, there's a few of those.
There's a moment in the first season of Felicity where this character, Todd, is like pledging his love to Felicity. He's like, we will kiss. And then is hit by a bus. And everyone involved, Mrs. Matthew Rhys, Carrie Russell, is like, ah! I kept expecting that to happen, but like with a whale.
Right.
Just like chomp. It did mm-hmm. seem like the show kept that in its back pocket in case it needed it. So it just is very confident and funny, but also it understands the rhythms of horror movies.
Yep.
And I don't know why. I mean, I do know why, but we're not talking about Shining Vale, but this is why I was hesitant about this, that it's mm-hmm. like sometimes horror comedy is like you're just impatient, but
yeah.
this understands both tones well enough. So yeah, yep. recommend.
You know what else everybody's recommending? This theme. Mm-hmm. People that just hear it once, they just go out to all their friends. They're like, to stop what you're doing, put down those surgical tools, listen to this theme. All right, it is time for Ask EHG, which means we must spin the wheel of judgment and figure out who won last week's Ask EHG, where you answer our question. Here we go. The wheel is being spun. It is Sarah judging this week.
Yes, it is. And our question came from Dave, who asked, what is something that answers as many of the questions from last week's Ask EHG at once? And so we got some really involved answers, all of which I loved. But let's start with some runners-up that were rather brief. Anne with an E had a different take on the question and said, Ken Jennings on meth as a host, not a contestant, which I thought was pretty funny. And then she was like, wait, am I doing this right? And everyone was like, no, but it still works. Sean Johnson said, late-stage capitalism. Dr. Calhoun said Uranus, and then had some other answers that suggest that Dr. Calhoun may have been having a stroke. We hope you're very well.
Doctor, heal thyself.
Yeah. And Lara submitted a photo essay of the Dybbuk, her dog. It was very convincing, but I'm going to go with Wrightwood, who said a Sophia Petrillo Christmas tree ornament. Oldest thing I own. Sophia is an old lady. Newest, it's the newest ornament I own. This is something I own. The OWN network, surprisingly, Golden Girls has never aired on OWN, but Golden Sisters has. That was a 2013 reality show following three sisters in their 70s and 80s who originally became famous from a video of their reaction to the Kim Kardashian sex tape.
Yeah, of course.
What's the sum of you, the things you own? This is a dumb question, and Sophia would tell you so. Pwned. Sophia is best known for pwning Rose. Pawned. This was a gift, so in a way it was pawned off on me. And as I don't partake in Christmas, I really should pawn it off on someone else. Prawn. She's been portrayed in at least three prawn parodies. Prawns. It's approximately the size of a prawn. And also there is a lot of seafood in Sicilian cuisine. And purr. A cat could use it as a toy. I'm a sucker for Golden Girls content, as you know, so Wrightwood, well done. Please contact David T. Cole on Discord.
Before we make this official, I do have an answer for this I just thought of.
Maybe, oh, great.
Maybe it's better than that one.
Maybe.
Jesus Christ.
Praise him.
Praise everywhere.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fine. Wrightwood, DM me on Discord and I will hook you up. All right, let's get into your questions for us this week. First one comes from Damon. What current show desperately needs a zombie apocalypse? Tar.
I went with zombie show somehow still on. NCIS. Amazingly still making not only new episodes, but another spinoff coming soon.
Honestly, not that, but a movie that is a zombie outbreak on an aircraft carrier would kind of be great.
Yeah, that is true.
Like under zombie siege.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Mm-hmm. My first instinct was to say space show, but For All Mankind technically already has one because these characters are just walking around like zombies and should not still be alive. So I went with the morning show. I just feel like everybody on that network needs to get it. It's time. Dave.
My answer is The Miniature Wife, where the zombie outbreak happens in the tiny people world. And in order for the outbreak to get beyond tiny people, where a tiny zombie bite can zombify a tiny person. Mm-hmm. But if the zombies want to zombify a full-size person, 30 of them have to bite them at once.
Of course, yeah.
And that takes a lot of coordination. Steel Meal Eric. What are some of the competitions, the games, on Canadian Gladiators? And what are some of the gladiators themselves? Sarah.
Merging on the QEW, adding maple leaves to corporate logos on billboards high above the ground, and poutine speed eating.
Yep.
Gladiators will include Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Naylor brothers from MLB. Dave.
I just realized I forgot to do the game, so I'm going to go speed skating on the Canal River in Ottawa. Was it Renault?
Rideau,
the Rideau Canal. As far as names go, we got Squamish, Beaver, Ogopogo, Chinook, and Brian Mulroney.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I also had Chinook, but it was a game. It's Joust, but with eight wind machines going. So you're trying to fight each other while also fighting the weather.
Can they have small parachutes?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Snow wrestling. It's like mud wrestling, but it's colder. And extreme jerseying, which is what it sounds like. And gladiators include Hat Trick, Black Ice, and Toque.
I was thinking Ice Hotel Invasion could be another game.
Yes.
Raphael, is there a single episode of TV that you believe everyone should have to watch because it is just so good? I'm going to go with Taylor Cole's canon inducted One Way Out from Andor. This is the prison breakout episode. Yeah. That's really fantastic episode of television. And, you know, you can just watch that one by itself, I think, and kind of get the gist.
Yeah.
Tara.
The one I've probably personally forced on the most different people is the first Taskmaster episode we inducted into the canon, which is season 2, episode 1 with the potato toss.
Right. That's Sarah. Good. Atlanta, Teddy Perkins from season 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. Milsnack, fuck, marry, kill, brainy Smurf, handy Smurf, and hefty Smurf. Tara.
There has never been an easier FMK, in my opinion.
I thought so, too.
Fuck hefty. Very handy, because you're going to have stuff break down in your house.
Yep.
And kill Brainy. Yep. He is so annoying.
Yep.
Dave.
Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hefty's got them big, strong arms. Good for hugging
That's
and
right.
keeping you in place while he does his biz.
Sure.
And yeah, you don't want to deal with Brainy. Brainy's super annoying, so we're going to kill him. And yeah, marry Handy. He's literally handy to have around.
Yeah.
All right. Sarah, you never agree with us on fuck, marry, kill. So please... let us know your weird rationale for your different answer. I'm sure is coming.
Yay!
I said the same thing.
Okay.
Brainy sucks. Handy rules. And Hefty, on top of being Hefty, might have gotten a like brand ambassadorship for Hefty trash bags, which means
Good
you
point.
Get free household supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love it.
And it's easy to clean up after.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Easy fail. Because he ejaculates so much.
And it's blue and it gets everywhere.
It's blue and it gets everywhere. EC Fell, this is for Tara and Dave. What's the last decorative holiday item you've purchased from HEB? Tara, do you remember?
Yeah, I think it was the cowboy boots Christmas stockings.
In the past, we've got HEB stuff like the HEB shopping cart.
Love the shopping
ornament
cart.
And stuff like that. So, yeah. All right. Good call.
Yeah.
Drillfield Jen, what is Jazz doing in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms? I'll take your word for it. You have to listen to the gratuitous boob shots they don't show. So I want to get you on that rhythm. Sarah.
The Seventh Kingdom is all the jazz we muted along the way. Tara.
If you, Jovial Gent, think I can approve upon a YouTube video by a user named NerdWriter1 titled What's Jazz Doing in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, you are mistaken, and we'll link it in the show notes, but to take you at your...
Is it
you
in know, universe?
Yes! No, it's not diegetic.
Okay.
But they play it in the at the beginning of the last episode during a funeral, if I recall correctly.
Okay.
The person who died was killed for suggesting it. Yeah.
It's apparently taking people out of the story. It's being funny, allegedly, according to NerdWriter. It is joining several other anachronistic music choices in the season one finale, which includes 16 Tons, the Tennessee Ernie Ford song playing over the closing credits. And that is all the recapping of this episode you're getting from me, because that was 3 minutes worth. And there were seven more after that. And I'm not watching it.
Sorry, what was the show that was in 16 Tons?
The finale.
Of the same show? Yeah. Of this show?
Yeah.
What the fuck? All right. It's kind of... I just think, like, eventually, if you're connected to a show or franchise long enough, because I think the guy that did Game of Thrones music is also, like, the actual instrumental composer for this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you just get bored after a while. Like,
probably.
The guy that did The Mandalorian, you know, the... whatever his name is.
Ludwig Göransson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
By the time he got to the end of the second season, he's doing fucking Skrillex stuff in the Luke Skywalker. Here he is. Like, fuck that shit. Like, I know you're bored, dude, but don't put Skrillex shit in Star Wars. It just like, it's just not right. And I don't approve of it.
I don't care enough about the Game of Thrones universe to care what they do music-wise.
Oh, that's true. Laffer, L-A-F-R. We still don't know what we're supposed to do with that name. They're not telling us. Are there any memorable shows you ever got sucked into because you just couldn't be bothered to look for the remote? It's on TV. I'll watch it. Hey, this is pretty good. Sarah.
Our remote when I was a kid was a wired box jobby with push buttons. I've talked about this before. It was impossible to lose, but it did occasionally stop working, like when a deranged kitten had teethed on it. Dusty, still kind of mad about that, which is how me and Dave Sr. got sucked into an In Search Of marathon back in the 80s with consequences that redounded well into the teens. God bless you, Leonard Nimoy, and your Nostradamus episode. Tara.
I value my time and my remotes too much for that. If I have lost it, I'm going to find it before I move on with my life. Dave.
I think when we're in Hawaii, this is what happened with Frisky Dingo. The TV was just on and it was on Comedy Central.
On hotel TV.
Yeah, on hotel TV. And we just didn't change the channel. And we're like, this is fucked up. This is great. Rube Goldberg, what words do you find aesthetically pleasing? Tara.
Bisque. Sarah.
I'm just going to give John Ramos a second to make a bet with himself. Vituperative. Ooh. Dave.
Litotes.
That is
good. Oh, yeah.
Sully rhymes with Julie. What is a personal crusade that means almost nothing to the world at large, but you have taken on with the fervor of a martyr? Sarah.
Of a martyr, not a murder.
Martyr.
St. Buncey of closing the lid before you flush, even in like a public or restaurant washroom or someone else's house, I will still do it. Once you've been radicalized vis-a-vis fecal aerosol, there simply is no returning to the innocent but benighted life you led before. Misted in germs. Dave.
I'm a broken man these days, so I don't know what I'm actually super mad about in that way. But it used to be when people would misuse the word blog to describe things on the internet.
That's mine too.
That's amazing.
Oh, is that your blog? No, it's a fucking website. It's not a blog.
Yes. Well, it goes in either direction. Sometimes people call a post a blog.
I guess if the modern equivalent is when people call an episode of a podcast a podcast.
I had to be trained out of that one, so thank you, Dave. Mm.
That's it for us. Here's your question to answer, dear listeners. It comes from Jovial Gent. After seeing a Chopped Castaways, that's a TV show, commercial, which looks like Survivor meets Chopped, I'm wondering what other two reality competition shows should be combined, and why isn't it The Amazing Race and Hoarders? Got an answer for that? Put it in our Discord Ask EHG channel. And as mentioned earlier in the show, just connect our website to your Patreon and you could answer right there as well. It is time for the extra, extra hot, great Tiny Cannon presenting this week, Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello. It's hard to believe the Tiny Cannon doesn't have an entry yet from The Wire. Perhaps because David Simon and HBO's brilliant account of broken systems in Bodymore Murderland would tend to lend itself more to full episode canon treatments. But in any event, I have a whole list of tiny canon possibilities from the show. Where better to start whittling that down than an entry into the Tiny Canon's whistling wing from the legendary Omar Little? Omar has a handful of iconic signifiers, of course. The duster he wears, the shotgun the duster conceals, the undeniable charisma of the actor who plays him, the late, great Michael K. Williams. But I'm going with the whistle because it exemplifies what The Wire always excelled at in terms of world building. Gives you information about character and setting, but in an organic way that does not lean on clumsy exposition to catch viewers up with information everyone in-universe already has. In other words, Omar and his code are known quantities to the folks who are about to flee before him in clip one.
Something ain't right, yo.
Watch out, man. Look on that fool. He's packing. Here he comes.
Yo.
Yo, son, come on. Yo, Omar's coming, man. Oh, shit!
Stands alone.
Oh, indeed. Just in this clip, you've got the whistling, of course, of the farmer in the dell. You've got Omar's code, sort of, because the whistle does give prospective Robbies the chance to bail. You've got a character saying, "Omar coming," and you hear his shotgun. We've seen Omar two episodes prior to this in The Wire in the episode The Buys, but episode 5, The Pager, is the debut of the whistle and the character's true debut as a magnetic presence to the audience and to others in the Wireverse. I hope you will agree that voting Omar's warning whistle of the farmer in the dell into the canon is all in the game.
Thank you, Sarah. Should I go first?
Sure.
Yeah, Sarah, you already anticipated the points I was going to make. I mean, this is on its face. Even if you hadn't heard the clip, if you'd watched the show, you know, like, yes, obviously, this is canon worthy. But yeah, using it as an alert shows us his honor code. It reveals his character in a very, you know, efficient way. And the contrast between the innocent children's song and the terrifying event that is coming is a great way to create creeping dread. It's like, you know, anytime you hear a nursery rhyme recited in a creepy way, it's the same sort of thing. And I feel like all of those are ripping off this moment in The Wire, which is, as we may forget, like decades old at this point. So great submission. Very well argued. Dave.
Did you guys see in the YouTube comments of that clip about all the people talking about how the shotgun noise is incorrect?
No, but I don't care.
All the gun nuts? Yeah, okay. Well, apparently, like, when he just, at the end of that clip where he puts the shotgun on that guy's chain and says the cheese stands alone, you could hear it in the clip. He's, cocking the, pumping the shotgun.
Racks it, mm-hmm. Yep.
But apparently that means he couldn't fire it until that point. So if anything happened, he wouldn't have a gun at the ready or something like that. I don't understand guns. I actually don't understand double barrel shotguns. Do they shoot two at once or do you shoot one then the other? Whenever there's shotguns in movies and they're like, it feels like there's like too many kajijis for what a shotgun would do. Like, I feel like a shotgun is like kapow and then you have to reload. It's like a musket, basically.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's something for the gun enthusiasts listening to our podcast.
Sure.
Also entered into the don't read the comments tiny canon.
I thought it was kind of interesting, even though I couldn't follow it. But, you know, this is what the internet is for, right?
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about this is, you know, the legend billing of Omar is that when it comes to dispatching him in such a banal and sort of street law way that it really just hits home what a war zone this whole area is. So I feel like, you know, this is the biggest legend building scene he has. And then it pays dividends later where I forgot the kid's name, but that character just.
But it is an actual child.
Yeah. The actual child in the convenience store just like pops on one. But this, even isolated, is really great. Just like the terror in everybody's eye, that sort of moment where it's like, what's this whistling fool doing? Oh shit, it's Omar. Everybody scramble. The guy losing his CD player.
His disc band. Yeah.
It's like a tire going around and around and finally falling down on the sidewalk. Really great scene. So yeah, really smart entry. All right, let's make this official. Tara, what do you say about this one?
Yay.
Yeah, me too. So, ooh. Omar Whistling Farmer and the Dell from The Wire, you are hereby inducted into the extra hot, great, tiny whistling cannon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for the Not Quite Winners and Losers of the Week. I have my Not Quite Winner. It is Nick Offerman. He is in Margot's Got Money Troubles.
Yes.
Not problems.
He plays Margot's dad, a pro wrestler.
So the baby in there, apparently in the scene, uttered his first words to Nick Offerman. So congratulations, Nick. Baby's first words were, I didn't like Ron Swanson's continual character assassination on Parks and Recreation, which is a lot for baby's first words, but there they are.
Yeah.
It's a very discerning baby.
It is. Loser of the week. The male friend writers who would shit talk stars within their earshot if they couldn't sell a joke in the room. This came via Lisa Kudrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's got a lot of money. She's got a lot of fuck you money. So I think it's time for payback. Anywhere from ruining them to hiring hitmen.
Yeah.
She's got the cash.
At the very least, name names.
Name names. Yeah.
Come on.
Maybe they're all out of the biz by now. Who knows?
Well, maybe they're dead already.
Sarah D. Bunting.
My not quite winner is Michael Beach joining the interrogator to play Stephen Fry's character's best friend. This is a Fox procedural about interrogations, and this is pretty much the only reason I would have to watch it is Michael Beach, who I would watch or listen to reading the phone book. I don't actually know if he does any audiobooks, but dang, he should. That is a sexy voice and a sexy man. But enough about me, not quite loser of the week. The Lost producers, who only told Michelle Rodriguez and Cynthia Watros that they were being written out of the show moments before they shot their final scene, which was them getting shot. Harold Perrineau knew but didn't tell them, and as a result, one of them is not speaking to him to this day. We talked about this on a recent episode of our sister or cousin podcast. Was it Again With Them?
It came up with a today, and today is Again With Them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I can't believe whoever, I assumed it was M-Rod, but someone did like a real deep dive on who it could be. And they sort of think it has to be Cynthia Watros. I forget the exact rationale, but whoever it is, like even Perrineau in this article, and we can link it in the show notes on IGN, was like, what do you want me to do? Like, I got the script. I say what it says. I'm an actor. I'm not responsible. Why are you still not talking to me? Mm-hmm. If people forget, like, the excessive misdirection that the entire Lost creative team had to engage in to keep spoilers from getting out. Yeah. Like, it was really intense. I stopped watching the show like a third of the way through, ergo did not care, but like he was probably threatened with never working again if he divulged it to anyone, including his co-stars.
I think the most he could have done in that circumstance was make it somehow on record to the producers or whoever is making these decisions. Of course, I will not say anything because those are my marching orders and you're my boss and all that. But I'm just telling you, you got to tell them at some point. Like, you can't have this be now in front of your cameras.
Yeah, this is shitty.
Oh, by the way, this is your last scene. Like, that is also not acceptable.
Yeah.
So I think like the best he could do was like, I have put in, like, I've done the best by you that I could under the circumstances.
And that exactly.
You are just finding out right now isn't on me. It's on the producers. And I tried to make it happen for you.
Yes. My Not Quite winner of the week is Adolescence, the TV show about a little boy killing a girl in his class or something. I don't know. I haven't watched it and I won't watch it, but I am shocked that we are still reading about it winning awards. It came out over 1 year ago, and I feel like we've been through the whole cycle of it winning at like the Emmys and then the Golden Globes and then the SAG Awards, and now it's still winning awards. This was like a BAFTA TV Craft Award. Enough about Adolescence. Like, everyone involved has moved on. It's enough already. My Not Quite loser of the week, speaking of it's enough already, is Amy Lou Wood, who is hosting SNL UK this weekend, and in a promo, I guess, for her episode, made a joke about the SNL US sketch where they made fun of her teeth. And it's like, again, speaking of things we've been through, that's over a year old now as well. And at the time, like, the people involved apparently apologized to her. She said, like,
wait, how long between then and now?
Over a year.
Wow, it's quite the gap.
Jesus.
My point is, never let him see you sweat. Like, bitch about this on your group text. Don't bring it to television. It just makes you look like you have no sense of humor. Like, I'm sorry, but her teeth are crazy. Obviously, a sketch show is going to make fun of them. It's not my fault. I'm the Harold Perrineau of telling her about her teeth.
Hello, this is Extra Credit. Welcome in, Grandpas. Happy to have you here. Today's Extra Credit is SkyMauled. I had Tara and Sarah write down five characters that they enjoy or know about or are familiar with, and then I had them generate five for me as well. And then after all the lists were generated, I said, now we got to buy everybody on our list something from the SkyMall catalog, and that's what we're doing today. So we'll go around the horn. One at a time. Let's start with Tara. Who's your first character and what are you buying them from the SkyMall catalog?
Okay, first of all, I just want to say, as an observation of the SkyMall catalog, which was, this was my first time visiting SkyMall.com, the SkyMall pill dispenser tab is way more expensive than I would have ever guessed.
So big.
They have a lot of choices for your pill dispenser needs.
And they all look like the Simon game from the 70s.
Yes, they do.
They're gigantic. Mm-hmm. Before you get into it, the other thing I will say generally about the SkyMall is I feel like the SkyMall isn't quite as crazy as it used to be back in the day where you would get it.
Agree.
Yeah.
There are certain things I guess we don't sell out loud anymore. Like, SkyMall used to have a lot of, like, spy on your family gadgets and stuff like that. Like the hidden camera you can stick in your butt, you know, and that kind of stuff. So
yeah. All right. That said, I did not buy anybody on my list a pill dispenser.
I did.
My first character is Ruth Wilder from Glow. This is the Alison Brie character. I'm getting her the SkyMall Classic Flip Open A to Z address and phone directory because, like this product, she is from the 80s. And I was fascinated by these whenever I came across one as a kid. So
is that the one where you slide the metal thing and then you press the button and it opens up to the letter?
Exactly.
All right. Nice.
That's what Ruth is getting. All right. Who's next?
Sarah.
My first character is Christopher Moltisanti, which is a good thing because we did get through the whole episode without talking about food, food. He's getting the instant heat blanket, which is not even gadgety. It's just like fun fur, basically. I mean, it does look toasty, but in case he and Polly get lost in the Pine Barrens again, he doesn't want to have to use like van carpeting. Instant heat blanket comes in a couple colors and does look very cozy.
So what is it, like a chemical reaction? It's like a giant icy hot pad?
No, I think just like you put it on and it's cozy.
Probably because
it's like all polyester. It's like fleece on one side and then a different kind of fleece on the other. And
I was imagining a giant extension cord from the car.
Yeah.
Or like you plug it into the cigarette lighter. Yeah. But yeah, no, I don't think there's any tech to it. I think it's just a blanket that's very fat. Anyway.
All right. So to keep this fair, I asked you guys to populate my list. The first one was Truxton Spangler. And you're going to see him one day in the Tiny Cannon for Tiny Cannon names.
Yes.
He's from Rubicon, a show that many people have fond memories of that just died on the vine, unfortunately.
Sadly.
We didn't get the conclusion to that, but it was a good thriller. So Truxton Spangler is sort of like the shadowy guy that, you know, might be your friend, might be the enemy, you know, sort of plays both sides. For him, I'm going to buy because I feel like he has the backstory where he was cool once upon a time before he got corrupted, but not like cool, but like, my formative years were in the 60s cool. So for him, I'm getting the electric guitar amplifier with built-in speaker, 40-watt edition, but it comes in a lot of color choices. So the one I'm getting for him is natural wood because I feel like that's how he rolls.
Yeah, for sure.
Have fun with that. Truxton, back to Tara.
My next character is Issa Dee, played by Issa Rae in Insecure, and she's getting something that I would not mind getting myself. It is the Kodak Smile Plus wireless digital instant print camera for when she goes away on one of her doomed, terrible vacation weekends with her female friends where they all end up fighting all the time. But before they get to that point, they'll have fond memories that they can all take home with them because it actually prints real photos, Polaroid style. Sarah.
My next character is Sharon Chersky from My So-Called Life, and she is getting the folding over the sink makeup mat, but only because, being real, I think Sharon Chersky probably invented that, patented it, and sold it to SkyMall. So I would be buying it for her just as like kind of a check-in, like here's what they're doing with it in terms of the colorways.
Love that.
Dave.
My second character was the Dowager Countess from Downton Abbey. Do you know what I'm getting here, guys?
A weekender?
No. Wi-Fi automatic pill dispenser and 28-day remote medication system with lock and key.
She will love it, I think.
Yeah, she will.
Well, she won't know how to work it.
That
so I
true.
Wonder if we got to have a butler, helper person do all that stuff. You know, she doesn't know what a weekend is. How is she going to be able to make this work? But my thinking is, you know, Downton Abbey in the movie, they killed her off and that killed Maggie Smith herself. She was so distraught that she'll never play the Dowager Countess again that she gave up the ghost shortly after.
Yeah.
So we want to go back in time and keep her alive. And what better way to keep her alive than the giantest pill dispenser you could find on the planet Earth. As mentioned, it is as big or bigger than the Simon game that we were talking about. It possibly could be as big as a dinner platter. It's hard to tell the scale. But this thing looks like a UFO that you would, it would like hover and shoot pills out of the sides into your mouth. It is crazy.
It does look like a Simon game mated with a chip and dip, but like a really big one, like from Fresh Direct. It's serves 8 to 10.
Yeah, it definitely has that. I'm in a time crunch charcuterie board sort of feel to it.
Yes.
So, Dowager Countess, let's keep her alive with all the pills in the world from the biggest pill dispenser we could find with the most technology.
Yes.
I don't know what the Wi-Fi does.
Maybe that's so if you control the pills, you can unlock it remotely if you're not there for your loved one.
Right. I think like Widow's Bay, the Downton Abbey doesn't have reception.
Yeah, probably not.
All right. Back to the top.
My next character is Lisa Stemple, played by Anne Elizabeth Ramsey in Mad About You, is recently heard having a very memorable monologue in a recent Tiny Cannon pitch. Lisa is going to get the sunny and fun SpongeBob Ultra Climber Water Slide Park. And knowing Lisa, she is going to try to figure out how to put it up in her apartment and flood her neighbors underneath. Sarah.
My next character is Abby Carmichael from Law & Order Mothership. She's an executive assistant district attorney. I get her the Kodak Scanza digital film and slide scanner because I just feel like it is going to help her with evidence conversion in order to present it to juries, and that she will have an easier time with it than her boss would because he is old man.
True.
I thought about getting her the bouncy house, though, I'm not going to lie. Dave.
My next character is Dave T. Cole favorite Pete Campbell from Mad Men, one of my favorite TV assholes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm buying it for him in his later years. So we last see him on the cusp of the 70s. It is now, let's say, the late 80s. He's getting up there. He's definitely divorced. He definitely did not remarry. And for him to keep him in company with as little responsibility as possible, I'm buying him the Jumble Pets Premium Fish Aquarium Kit, complete glass fish tank kit with LED lighting and more.
Oh,
it is
yeah.
a 12-gallon aquarium.
Yep.
For his later lonely years, minimum effort, minimum companionship. Back to Tara.
My next character is Uncle Baby Billy, as played by Walton Goggins in The Righteous Gemstones, and he is getting the Easy Grip. Of course, it is E, letter Z. Grip mm-hmm. nail clipper. It's a standard nail clipper, but it has like finger and thumb loops. And he's getting this because he does not trust his young wife, Tiffany, not to cut him accidentally.
I'm going to skip ahead to Alfred Paperboy Miles from Atlanta because he is the most SkyMall enjoyment coded of the Atlanta characters, in my opinion, except possibly secretly Vanessa. So I think that he would make fun of the Jumble Pets Premium Fish Aquarium Kit with LED lighting at first, but then he would be quietly psyched to watch and know about the fish. Second choice for him, of course, was the Ivation personal SOS keychain alarm in case he gets lost in some woods again. Mm-hmm. It could happen.
This brings up the delicious possibility that these two characters may meet on an online aquarium forum.
Oh,
in the early
no
days
way.
Of the internet.
Oh my God.
That's very true.
And I would just watch that happen, even if it's only typing.
Oh, yeah.
I would watch it.
All right. My penultimate character is Stephen Toast from Toast of London. I am giving him a Christmas item. It is a Christmas tree skirt. And the reason I'm giving it to him so that he can say, poinsettia.
Yep.
Gorgeous.
Got to do it.
My final character, one that came up in our main show this week, it is Ness Gordon, played by Scott MacArthur in Running Point. Ness is going to get the 9-tray digital food dehydrator because that seems like something he would be passionate about for approximately yeah. 3 days and then uh-huh. never touch again for the rest of his life.
And I feel like he's bringing it to the office and he has like
yep.
One of those wax bags you put a Danish in
yeah.
and he's like eating it out of it and he's offering mm-hmm. it to everybody and nobody partakes of it and he becomes sort of insulted as the episode goes along.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep. Sarah.
My last one is Dr. Peter Burns from Melrose Place. I considered getting him one of the 18 or 36 wine bottle storage units, but mm-hmm. I mean, they're just drinking grape juice on the HDs anyway. So instead, since he's played by Jack Wagner, he will be receiving the 39-inch Telecaster electric guitar, full-size Paulownia body in black and white. It's mm-hmm. the kind of 80s retro back to the 50s that he might have played in the 80s. I mean, he would have had like a nice guitar that wasn't from SkyMall. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
All I need is for him to receive that. Dave.
Our last character, and you know I love him, Pete Hornberger from 30 Rock, as played by Scott Essett. You may remember towards the end of the series, he had a plan to fake his own death and then live life on the road away from his wife. So to make that a reality for him, or at least to help him along his way, I'm getting him two things. One is the 16-inch RV roof vent fan. It is 12 volts, 10 speed, and has an LED light, rain sensor, and a remote so he can keep tabs on whether his vehicle is going to start leaking everywhere like mine is. Where's the leak coming from, Dave? I don't know. is suddenly my car has all water in it. I don't want that to happen to him. So he's going to have this nice new thing to keep him dry. In addition to that, I'm giving him a portable propane water heater and shower pump so he can stay on the road. He doesn't have to check into some sketchy RV park just to take a nice hot shower. He's going to be able to do that every day while he's living his second life on the road, never stopping, always moving. Pete Hornberger, you're welcome. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra, Extra Hot Great. We ferried over to Apple TV's new horror comedy, Widow's Bay, before answering your burning Ask EHG questions like, where on TV should the next zombie outbreak happen? And why jazz in your show, George R.R. Martin? Why? Sarah successfully cleared the corner for our first tiny whistling cannon. We celebrated those who were quite the best and worst of the week, and then we wrapped it all up with some Sky Mall gifts for 15 TV characters. Next up, it's an all-canon episode on EHG Prime. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
It's a nice town. You don't need the gimmick.
And Sarah D. Bunting.
Fuck Cape Cod.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we're gonna see you next time right here on Extra, Extra. Great.
Yo. Yo, son, come on. Yo, Omar's coming, man.
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Yo, son, come on. Yo, Omar's coming, man.
Oh, shit!